Hello everybody, I'm George from Ireland, and just in case you think I'm never in Ireland, well here I am, in Cathal Daniel, County Kerry. So this is the horse-drawn coach of Danny Lee O'Connell, and you see that figure, I suppose she's Hibernia, with the harp, the Irish wolfhound, the Irish round tower in the background. So these are obviously emblematic of the Emerald Isle. So he was in prison for, what was it, sedition, given a 12-month sentence, held at Richmond Prison, Dublin, and then released after only 3 months because there was such uproar at his detention. And he'd said that the Act of Union was a nullity, was not morally or legally binding on Ireland. He said, argued for its unconstitutionality, and he said, you know, that the previous Irish Parliament did not have the legal power to dissolve itself. Derry Nairn House, his house in Kerry. He had a house on Merrion Square in Dublin, and he had also had a house in London, opposite Brown's Hotel. So he successfully got Catholic emancipation, our legal equality for the Catholic majority in 1829. And so only at that point was he able to enter the British Parliament. And then he set up the Repeal Association, for sometimes known as the Loyal National Repeal Association, using slogans like Erin Go Bragh, as an Ireland forever, Ireland for the Irish. But even God Save the Queen, to say that, OK, we want a separate Irish Parliament, we have some sort of political connection with Great Britain, we don't want a republic. He abhorred republicanism. Remember that virtually every country in the world had a monarchy at the time, and he associated republics with anarchy and tyranny. And he saw in the French Revolution that usually revolutions end up producing a regime worse than the one that they overthrew. So he didn't want this endless bloodletting. He'd been horrified by 1798, and indeed he'd joined the militia in Dublin. So he was willing to fight. That's something that sort of airbrushed out of history. He indeed had been called to the bar a month before the 1798 rising, when obviously being called to the bar involved an oath to the King of Ireland, George III. So the repeal movement was gathering pace. There was Catholic rent, encouraging everybody to donate a penny from each household that almost everyone could afford, and to vote for candidates, Protestant candidates initially, those who committed to Catholic emancipation in the 1820s. And then he himself stood in 1828 in the Clare by-election, finally took his seat the third time when Catholic emancipation was brought out. But after 1829, Catholic emancipation had been achieved. It was repeal of the Act of Union, which he never achieved. So, and in 1843, he declared that would be the year of repeal. That didn't happen. He was aghast at the Act of Union, which was passed in 1801 and took effect on New Year's Day. Passed in 1800, took effect on New Year's Day, 1801. So he organised these mass meetings. So he got ordinary people involved in politics. Politics had been something for the elite up until that time. And he's said to have addressed a million people at Tara Hill, where high kings had previously crowned. There was increasing consciousness of our Gaelic past, partly because of his friend Thomas More, the poet, writing about it. And then the big meeting scheduled for the 8th of October 1843 at Clontarf, then that was just north of Dublin, but that was called off because the government banned it, and he wanted to avoid bloodshed. And he said this is actually play into the hands of our foes, found guilty of seditious conspiracy. That Richmond prison where he was held in, it was then renamed Beggar's Bush Barracks. It's now part of a university these days. It still stands on the Grand Canal in Dublin, as in south of the Liffey. So he used to come back here to Derry Nairn House in September and October, have some repose here. His wife and daughters like to stay in Dublin. His son has came back with him. So he pleaded cases as a barrister all over the country. He himself been on trial in the Four Courts in 1844, and he spoke in his own defence, not hiring a barrister. So he earned good fees as a barrister, but he was not good with money. He was known for his liberality and in his high spending ways. What was I going to say? So various people like Charles Gavan Duffy, who became prominent in Home Rule politics later, was imprisoned with others like Thomas Steele, Richard Barrett, John Gray, and T.M. Ray. Richard Barrett is not the guy who was a Fenian who was hanged for the Clerkenwell explosion, and not the Richard Barrett who was an IRA man executed in 1922. But in prison, they were imprisoned in considerable comfort, having their own cells, could wear their own clothes, didn't wear prison uniform, didn't do prison work or observe prison timetable, bring in their own furniture, and have as many guests as they wanted. So they were freed in September 1844, when the House of Lords, this is the highest court of the United Kingdom, says to declare that their convictions to be unsafe. So they were paraded through the streets, and 200,000 people saw them, and that was astonishing, about half the population of Dublin. And people pulled this, not horses. So there it is, very ornate. And the back it says repeal. So it was known as the Liberator rather than Daniel O'Connell. It was his son, was young Daniel. Okay, this is meant to look like one of those Roman ceremonial chariots. See the conquering hero come, like a victorious emperor, something like that. And this empty chariot was led to Glasnevin when he died in 1847. So this is a very poor state. It was extensively renovated in 1991. And I saw it when last time I visited here in the year 2000. And there was a big celebration for the centenary of Catholic emancipation in 1829. I remember my grandfather took part in that parade. And you see the chair way up high he was, so everybody could see him. Okay, and this is what he said. Remember a proclamation issued to people cancelling one of his rallies. Once again, I return to you with the utmost heartfelt thanks for peace, quiet, and good order you've observed. And I conjure you by the country we all love, and even in the name of God we all adore, to continue in the same peace, quietness, and perfect tranquility. And it so goes on. Attack nobody, offend nobody, injured no person, no riot, no tumult, no blow, no violence, and so forth. So he adored the placidity and the majestic beauty of being here in his native Kerry. He liked hunting with his hounds, catching hares and so forth, and seeing the Atlantic rolling not far away. When his wife died relatively young, and she's buried in the ruined abbey, which is on an island. I think the island's only an island for a few days, for a few hours a day. At low tide, you can walk across. I've not been to it. But as I pointed out, he himself died at Genoa, Italy, en route to Rome. He wished to be blessed by Pope Pius IX. And he eventually said, the difference between Englishmen and Irishmen is that Englishmen are Protestant and Irishmen are not. And so some Irish Protestants felt, he was saying, that they weren't Irish, would it be bad if there was a repeal of the Act of Union, an Irish Parliament was re-established. So he became increasingly religious as he got older. That was not unusual at the time, cramming for finals, people thinking, where do we go when we die? And he'd wanted secularism, but some of the Catholic episcopacy said, no, we must have a state religion. Most countries have a state religion. Catholicism being the religious denomination of perhaps 75% of Irish people, surely there must be recognised as the official form of Christianity in Ireland. But he never actually endorsed that. But there was always a suspicion this would happen. And that's when some people in Ulster began saying Ulster or part thereof would have to be excluded from repeal were that to happen. The partition of Ireland was then mooted. But he wasn't anti-Protestant. He'd had Protestant friends. Indeed, he'd been vital to him in his early career. And indeed, holding property on behalf of his family when the law wouldn't allow, you know, Catholics to give most of their property to one son. He'd inherit this from his childless nephew, Maurice Hunting Cap O'Connell. And this is how conservative they were. One of his uncles was in the Irish Brigade in the French Army. Okay, so look at this. Here's the chapel he had built. Okay, and a memorial to Elizabeth Mary, friend and one of his daughters. So four of his sons, his four surviving sons, they all went into politics after him, all elected to the Parliament of the United Kingdom. And you can see Stations of the Cross. See the six candles it should be? Why don't I see four candles? Catholic Church, we always have six candles on the altar. Anglican ones always have two, okay? And the crucifix, the image of Jesus on the cross up high. So he worshipped here on a daily basis. And look, the Stations of the Cross, okay? Is that the arrest of Jesus? Anyway, so thank you so much for watching my video. I very much recommend you come here. So, and Pope Gregory the 16th, he gave an indulgence to anyone who prayed here. It was a portable altar he could take with him. So there was Ahamore Abbey on the coast here, well, on that little islet that is ruined, and that's where his good wife is buried. So he became much more religious after 1816. His wife was zealously religious. Right. Anyway, thank you so much for watching my channel. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon, donate on PayPal, georgecallahan79@gmail.com. Toodaloo, everyone. Goodbye from Derry and Arne House.